put your website to work while you play. A website works 24/7, so no matter where you are or what you're doing, people can still find you online. Start building your website today at GoDaddy.com. It starts with a .com domain. Enter promo code 199MYLF, that's 199MILF, at checkout to get your .com for just $1.99. Some limitations apply. See website for details. Hello, everybody. I'm Sophie, and welcome to MILF Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous. We like to talk about anything around here, from parenting and money issues to sex and dating. We like to make psychology fun. Yes, we do.
I love fun psychology.
Seriously, I hope listening will not only entertain you, but maybe help or inspire you a little bit along the way. I'm a psychologist, life coach, author, and mother of two. I am passionate about helping people live authentic, joyful lives. If you ever want to write to me and ask an advice question, you can either find me on Facebook at Sophie Venable, or you can email me at makeyourlifefabulous@gmail.com. I would be more than happy to answer your questions, so hit me up for some free advice. Listeners of MILF Talk, please welcome my favorite podcast buddy, Todd Robert Anderson.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Happy you're here. How are you today?
I'm all right.
I know. It's an all right day for you.
It's just an all right day for you.
Yeah, but we got here. We're here.
We're good.
I made it, too. I actually had quite a challenge getting here myself today. I got in at 2 o'clock from...
Oh, right. You got delayed at the airport.
Yes. I made some friends at the airport.
That's fun. Well, you know, there's something to being trapped in an airport. Because you have two choices. You can stress it and freak out and get mad and just spiral downward into anger.
Yeah.
Or you can say
and fume. Just fume.
Yeah, just
people
fume.
Around
like,
you.
Why? How? Yeah. The universe is the airline and goes this is crap.
Yeah.
Or you can get a drink at the bar and watch some football
That's
and make
what
new
I
friends.
Did. I met football friends. I met this woman, and we were chit-chatting about Seattle because my boyfriend's daughter's moving up there. And then I'm like, well, but so you live up there? She's no, I live in Temecula. I'm like, my sister lives in Temecula. And then I'm like texting my sister, come to the bar. I met one of your neighbors.
Yeah.
So we all chit-chatted for a while. And my girls, I have to say, total props to my daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, of course, when you get that little text on your phone that your flight's been delayed 3 hours, it's just like... Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
You know, and my teenager is just like, I just want to be home. But she totally pulled it together because, you know, weather is weather.
Yeah, you can't do anything about the weather.
Yeah. So actually the vibe in the airport, even though everybody was sort of like tired of sitting around. And I mean, it was kind of wall to wall people because flights were just.
Well, that claustrophobia can be kind of rough.
It's crazy. And I mean, there were just so many people there and. But the general vibe was like, well, none of us want to really fly in a lightning storm.
No, you don't.
So we're kind of just going to be here until we can fly without dying.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So it was, but my kids were amazing. We must have been in that airport for, 4 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
So we finally got home at like 2 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was challenging, but we had a good time.
Yeah, that's the important thing. It's worse if you have like little kids.
Oh, there were some babies
that
could tell they're like, I want to be in my bed and I don't really understand why we're here and this is awful.
Then it's just torture.
But if you have
older kids, or even better, if you don't have kids with you, then it's not so bad being
trapped.
Then
it's not so bad. Then you really can just go to the bar and drink.
Yeah, you have a good time.
Yeah, we went to Phoenix actually and it was super hot. But
imagine
super,
Phoenix hot.
But it was super fun because we went to a place that I've been wanting to go for a really long time, the Arizona Grand Resort.
What is that?
It is something you should know about. Actually,
I don't know about anything
because I think
Phoenix.
You should take Colby. Actually.
Really?
Yes. It's a giant resort, really nice. All the rooms are suites, so you know you have it's cool because you have the bedroom and then you have the closing door to the living room, you know, kind of like how Embassy suites are and stuff.
Yeah.
And the rooms are really nice, not that expensive, and they do have a resort fee, but with that resort fee comes a giant water park. with like a huge lazy river. Literally takes like 10 minutes to get around this lazy river, and a really fun spinny water slide, and then 2 8-story water slides.
8-story?
Yes.
That's really tall.
Ask me if I did it.
Did you do it?
I did it once.
Was it scary?
I felt violated. I'm just saying.
What? Was it like
you
all
gotta
twisty?
Buy me dinner first.
How long did it take?
Oh.
8 stories? How long is
to
that
to get down
ride?
To the
yeah.
bottom?
Yeah.
I don't know. 2 seconds?
2 seconds.
Like you just drop. You basically just drop.
Is it just a straight one? It's not
it's
like twisty?
Fucking horrifying. No, it's just a drop. Well, okay, one of them is uncovered and it's like a double drop. Ugh. And the other one is like covered mostly, except for the part that you want to see so that you actually crap your pants.
Uh-huh.
It's like a straight drop. Like you go out for a second and then you just go bam, like down, like 6 stories, you know? It's fucking crazy.
Wow.
And you know, you speed like to the end of this runway basically, and water is shooting up into all different parts of your body. It's awful.
You,
and I'm literally
you
at the
get
bottom,
like a colonic
like,
as part of the ride.
I'm literally at the bottom like my daughter's like, "Mommy, you did it. Do you want to do it again?" I'm like, No, I don't. I really don't. But I did it. I did it. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe when Colby's a little older, he's not.
Oh,
he's not ready.
Kids had no problem with it. The kids, like the little kid, all of them were just like, "Woo,
really?
Let's go!" Oh, they love that shit.
Because he doesn't like roller coasters.
Yeah,
yet.
See, I don't like roller coasters. But you know what he might like is the spinny one.
I'm sure he'd like the spinny one.
Because that one's all curly Q and fun, and you know that's awesome.
Yeah.
So and then the lazy river and the wave pool, like all that stuff. It was like super fun, and the food was great. So anyway, I really am not being sponsored by the Arizona Grand Resort, but I thought it was awesome.
Okay.
And it's 20 minutes from the airport, and like it was just a really easy, fun vacation, and my kids were awesome, and they're like awesome little travelers. I'm so proud of them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so...
Except for the flight.
Oh.
Except for the flight.
But I'm just happy to be home. But seriously, because right now where we're recording, we're really close to LAX. I was like, maybe we should just sleep here.
Just sleep out in the car.
Maybe should just sleep in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Come back in the morning. So we're here. So we made it.
Yay.
So do you remember a couple weeks ago we were like talking about kids and money and stuff?
I don't remember what happened yesterday. How am I going to remember that? I think I vaguely remember that. We were talking about kids and money.
God. Why?
Why?
Why do I hang out with you? All right, well.
We were talking about kids and money. Yeah,
no,
I do remember
I mean, I got like some comments and, you know, stuff from people that were sort of like, it was interesting because they're like, yeah, I want to do all that. You know, I want to teach my kids about this, but my husband and I don't even agree on,
oh,
you know, money.
Yeah. You got to get on the same page there.
Right. So, so one of my favorite people to bring on when we're talking about money stuff is, my dear friend, Ellen Fleischman. And she's sort of the go-to person because she's full of it too.
Oh,
free advice.
Free advice.
That is. So we're going to get her on the line.
Sweet.
And she's going to talk to us about this a little bit more.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, Ellen, are you on the line?
I'm right here.
How are you today?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Good. Thank you for calling in.
My pleasure.
So I got some questions last time when we talked about kids and money and talking to our kids about money and sort of having them earn allowances and get... just get a sense of the value. And yeah. And some people were asking, you know, I'd love to be able to do that, but my spouse doesn't even really agree with how I think about money. So, you know, where do we even start? So I just kind of wanted to hear from you a little bit. And you, one, tell us, you know, what you do and all of that. And
right.
And kind of the, well, we'll start with the way that, you know, parents might be able to approach this together.
Okay. Well, I'm Ellen Fleischman. I'm here at Silver's Financial Services in Chatsworth, 818-718-4643, and on the web at silversff.com. And I'm a securities dealer. I sell investments and insurance, and I partner with Mark Silvers, who does taxes and accountancy services. So we have kind of a full service shop here. I used to be a homeschool educator, though, and I have three kids of my own. And I really thought a lot about what's going on in our culture around money. And I think it starts in the family with the parents getting clear on what their own ideas are about money, what their experience was growing up, and what of that experience they'd like to give to their own children, and what of that experience they'd like to make sure stops with them. Not everyone had what we call a wound-free experience growing up around money. Different families have different issues. And the first thing is to get clear in yourself what it is that's going on inside you about money.
So when people get married, right, they're coming from their own family of origin, and then they get together to create this family business, so to speak,
yes.
Even if it's just the family business household, right?
Well, that's why marriage was designed initially, right?
Exactly. Business agreement.
For money
right.
And land, yeah.
So, this is Todd.
Yes,
Ellen, hi.
Property.
Hi, Todd. Ellen, hi.
Hi, Ellen.
How are you doing, Todd?
Good. Thanks for asking.
And so when you say, think about what money means to you, you know, like let's talk specifically, like what kind of questions should we ask ourselves kind of going into this mess?
Right. Well, I'm writing a book called Women's Thriving Guide, and my first book is going to be Money 101. And in that book, I've got a whole sheet that looks at different ideas we have about money. Mm-hmm. We grow up with ideas about poor people, about rich people, and what that means. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have ideas that rich people are evil, poor people are noble, or there's some sort of, trip that we've got about it that may prevent us from being all of who we can be around money. And so I think it's really important to unpack all of that and see what our unconscious assumptions are, even before we have a conversation with our partner. Because if we don't know what is setting us off or making us feel like this is a really important issue to settle this second, then we can't really be in a place to hear where our partner's coming from.
So what might be some of the questions on that checklist that you might ask yourself, you know, before you even try
yes,
to
well,
communicate
the worksheet
with somebody
looks
else?
At ideas that we hear out there in the world that our parents may say or other adults whom we trust, or things that we just might unconsciously pick up from the culture. Poor people are noble. Rich people are evil. Poor people can't get a fair trial. Mm. Rich people control the court system. Those are just a few of the ideas.
Money makes you an asshole.
Rich people are generous. Money is the root of all evil. I mean,
yes.
There's a lot of things that people learn about money that, true or false, don't really matter. It's about how we think about them, what we believe is true. And if we have ideas that money is evil or nice families don't talk about money, then it's impossible to have a conversation with your partner, much less with your children, about how money works in the family, how they can feel empowered around it, and how they can make some really conscious choices about what they want to do with their earning and spending power.
Well, that's interesting. Like, Todd, did you know, did your parents talk about like whether or not they could pay the bills, or was it sort of a quiet adult conversation, or did you hear about it?
Well, yeah. I mean, my dad made me aware that he made me aware that, you know, if I'm talking on the phone long distance.
Oh, God, remember that?
Yeah, I know. And I'm very, very old.
hang up, it's long distance.
Yeah, exactly. You talked for an hour long distance last night. Do you know how much that costs?
Right, okay.
And then he, you know, with those kinds of things, he would say, if you want to talk like that, it's fine, but you have to give me the money for that.
Okay.
So, like, that made me aware of how bills worked. And I think it's... And then oil and electricity and all that stuff. When you're
turn
a kid,
off the
it's
lights,
just like
blah,
a
blah,
thing
blah.
That happens, you know. But he would tell me that all the time. And it took a while for it to sink in that this everything is costing money.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the overall message that most kids hear is like, stop spending money.
Right.
Stop spending money. Money is scarce. And my father's favorite line of blessed memory, he'd go walk into the room, turn off what he considered to be the extraneous lights, and then fuss, What, you've got stock in the electric company? Well, actually, yeah. Daddy, I do now. I sell lots of utility stocks, and they do quite well. But that's really not the point.
Yeah.
When we grow up hearing those kinds of things fussed at us, it makes us afraid. It makes us feel ashamed. As like we're not allowed to take up space. We're not allowed to spend money. That spending money is scary and somehow wrong.
Oh, my dad used to keep the house so cold, too. I grew up on the East Coast. It was freezing in Massachusetts,
yep.
And I got cold really easily. And I'm like, can we just turn up the heat a little bit? And he was like, no, we don't need to. It's perfectly comfortable in here. And he's like, put on a blanket.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wear a blanket around the house. Put on two pairs of socks. No, yeah. I understand. I grew up in the Midwest. And my mother loved to have the air conditioning down to 72 in St. Louis in the summer when it was very humid.
Oh. Mm.
And then circumstances in our family changed when my parents got divorced, which often happens in families.
Yes.
And suddenly it was up to 80 because it was just too dear. It was just too expensive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very important for us to look at what our trips are about money and then have the conversation with our partner about what do we want to pass on to our kids? What are our values? See, there are two components to self-esteem. There's feeling lovable and feeling capable. And this is really about the capable part that we want to give to our kids. We want them to have a sense of confidence. We want them to have a sense of abundance. We want them to have gratitude, and we want them to have compassion. Those mm-hmm. are the four things that, in my opinion, are really important to instill in our children regarding money. So when we talk to our partner about it, we're asking, okay, what can we do to help them feel competent in the family, make them feel like they're making a contribution, and that contribution is important enough that we recognize it with money? Because that's how we keep score in this culture, is money. So when kids understand that from the age of 3, they can set the silverware on the table as part of making the family meal, mm-hmm. or they can pair socks out of the laundry, and as they get older, they can do more and more difficult and challenging chores and be compensated for that. That builds their competence.
Except if you make them pair socks out of the laundry, because you're setting them up for failure with that one. I'm sorry. That's just mean, Ellen.
I don't mean to be mean, but I had my 4-year-old doing her own laundry. She was of the opinion that it was important to change 9 times a day, and as soon as the clothes hit the floor, they were dirty. I said, let me introduce you to the washing machine. And from then on, she was doing her own laundry. So I think we infantilize children for far longer in this area than we need to, and we can encourage them to be competent and to find different ways where they can feel like what they're doing matters to the family.
Well, let me ask you something. It's kind of specific. I actually have a surprising number of friends who we all had this one thing in common. We kind of eventually grew up in nicer neighborhoods, but we were the ones that couldn't really afford to be in that neighborhood
mm-hmm.
and couldn't really afford to dress the same as the other kids in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting to me that I have so many people in my life who all have this same story. And it's interesting because, like, I live in Westlake, which is a really affluent neighborhood, and we're fine. You know, we're doing just fine, but you know, I am divorced, and so I don't have like massive amounts of expendable income.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids' friends, you know, they all get like $100 to go to the mall, or you know, like they get, you know, $50 a week for doing nothing, or you know, some of Mark's kids' friends just, I mean, my God, they just get anything they want, you know?
Yeah, and that's how I grew up.
And it's sort of like if you have, and then, they, you know, you're like, his kid will say, can I have, you know, $20 to go to the mall? And he's like, well, get a job.
Yeah.
And it's like, but none of my friends.
Say, get a job. Yeah,
yeah, you know, none of my friends have to get a job. And so this is, you know, this is a real, you were talking about self-esteem and self-worth and feeling loved and valuable and being able to take up space. And I do think that sometimes that message that like, well, you can't give me $20 to go to the mall sort of feels like, well, you know, why are my friends worth that? And I'm not, you know?
Ah, Okay. So I think we need to look at the next thing, which is abundance. Mm-hmm. And when we instill a sense of abundance in our children, what we're trying to do is help them see that what we have is enough, is more than enough, that we, if, from a religious point of view, are very blessed, uh-huh. very lucky, use whatever word fits with your particular cosmology. We have more than enough to survive, we have enough to thrive, and we make choices about where we spend our money.
Mm-hmm.
And because we make choices about where we spend our money, we're responsible stewards for that money, and we're choosing to put our money in these areas. And because you've had a conversation, hopefully, with your children about what their goals are around money, and they want a particular toy, or they want a trip, or they want a piece of clothing, or they want something that's outside of what you feel is within your normal budget, you mm-hmm. coach them on, okay, let's think about how you can get that for yourself. What can you do to contribute to that happening in your life? How can you manifest that particular garment or that weekend trip or that special activity that you want to do? And encourage them to be creative and to brainstorm and help them to get set up to wash your car, because you might pay for that anyway, but instead you give them the money when they're old enough to
mm-hmm.
do that.
Yeah.
There are lots of things that kids can do creatively to generate income on a catch-as-catch-can basis or even on a regular basis that can help them to feel like they're not only competent, but they've got a lot of abundance in their lives. And then they get to have the sense of, this is my money. What do I want to do with it? That's a different point of view from their friends who are being given everything and are being robbed of the opportunity to feel competent. They may feel abundant, but it's not their abundance. It's their parents' abundance.
Well, that's interesting. You said that just as my brain was sort of, I was wrapping my head around that. You're right. That's where the child is not experiencing creating their own abundance.
Correct.
They're just experiencing the trickle over from their parents' abundance.
Yes.
And they don't get empowered.
There's nothing tied to their self-esteem about it.
Right.
And some parents have it wired that because they love their kids, they give their kids anything they want.
Sure.
And
they
I don't think that that's actually helpful.
No. I agree with you.
I have a 25-year-old, a 21-year-old, and a 16-year-old. And the thing that I noticed, because my kids went to private school with children from far more affluent families than we were. I'm also divorced myself. And we went through the same issues. And my children, as I said, were doing their own laundry and were packing their own lunches. And the other children either had their mother doing it or they had staff.
Yeah.
So when it came down to the fact that my kids know how to live on their own now,
yeah.
and these kids don't, they have a far steeper learning curve later on in their life to learn how to be independent adults, because they never had to struggle, and that struggling is a muscle. You've got mm-hmm. to help them build that struggle muscle and get it strong. So when they want something and they work for it and they're successful at obtaining it, that's a success experience that they can then build on and refer to, and it's a touch point. Remember
yeah.
when you wanted that Nintendo game and I said you were going to have to earn it and it took you 10 weeks to earn it? Let me tell you, that Nintendo game is going to be far more meaningful to that child
mm-hmm.
than the Nintendo game that's just given to them.
Yeah. Mm. And what's really cool now, because you can like take, you know, let's say you take your old Nintendo game and you sell it, you mm-hmm. know, like you can sell it online and it's like,
yeah.
oh, this, whatever money you get, that's yours.
That's yours. Yeah.
That's your money. And you get to apply that to, you know, another thing, and you help them make decisions. Well, do you, now that you have the money, do you want to wait 2 more weeks and get the next version? Or
right.
do you know, and you help them learn how to make those choices, you know.
It also teaches them patience right there.
Yeah.
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 My son is 8. I have a question.
Instant mashed potato society is not really helpful to our children.
No.
No. I have a question. My son's 8, right? So
yes.
My wife read something about, you know, allowances. It was about, you give them an allowance, but you don't, they're not earning the allowance. They do things like helping out, like setting the table, like you said, but that's just part of being in the family.
Yes.
And they said keep the allowance. Where do you fall on that concept?
Well, I'm of the opinion that it's very important for them to do chores as being part of the family, and that their allowance is very much tied into that, because when they get to be older than 8, mm-hmm. they're going to start to refuse to participate in their chores as a way to test the waters and see what's going on with these kinds of boundaries. And when they hit the teenage years, there's going to be a lot of, I don't want to, gotta, have to do any of this anymore. I'm too busy, or I don't care.
But you think that tying the allowance to that, like if you're not doing chores, because I think the point of this thing my wife read was you don't want to tie the money to the chores because they should be doing the chores because that's part of being in the
part
family.
Part of the family.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's a lovely thought, and I think if that works for your family, that's great.
I don't know if it works.
Yeah, like if you can get them to follow.
That's not how the real world works.
Well, that's...
Because when you go to work and you are an employee and you do your job, you get paid. But if you don't do your job, they don't pay you, which is how it really operates. So let's look at that in terms of the family. Here are your chores. If you do your chores, you get paid. When you do your chores, you get paid. If you don't do your chores, you get paid less.
But there's a lot of things that we do in life, like laundry and cleaning the dishes and stuff, as adults, that we don't get paid for, right? If you don't do those things, then your life is unpleasant. Let me know what you think of this. What I will do is my kids have a couple jobs that they do. It's a little challenging because when you have like this split custody, and the houses are different, it's challenging.
So they have
a couple, you know, things each that they do that it's like, you know, my daughter will say, oh, can, you know, do I get a dollar for doing that? I'm like, no, you just do that because you live here.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're sort of doing too.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what we do instead of like a set allowance is if you do such and such, you get a point, and for this, you get a point, and for this, you get, you know, and the points are worth a dollar or whatever, you know, whatever they're worth. And it's a little bit, like you said, catch as catch can, and you know, kind of, there's not, it's not very structured, you know.
Yeah, because sounds like an extra level of bookkeeping that I personally wouldn't want to deal with, but if it works for your family, that's the litmus test.
You know, because I know that, like, my other daughter, she really likes structure, and I think she would kind of like to maybe arrange something where she could do, you know, kind of specific things for a particular allowance. And so, and I think I have the same concern Todd does, whereas it's like, well, I don't want you to do things that are just sort of basic self-care, you know, like dishes or whatever, just because you're getting paid. But I guess if that's what works, then pay them. Right, I guess.
Well,
as long
I mean,
as there's follow through,
we have sort of. Like,
well, what other jobs can they do when they're children? Let's really ask that question. What could they do out in the world to get paid? Now, some of them are going to be in the industry, but not very many.
Right.
And they're not going to really get a hold of that money because they're not competent to deal with that level.
Right.
So we have to create a structure in which what they can do gets compensated or rewarded, however you want to look at that.
Right, like laundry, dishes.
And all the different lessons can flow. This is how much you give. This is how much you save. And this is how much you spend. And I have some percentages there that I can recommend. I think it's important in building gratitude and compassion that it be a tradition in the family that 10% of what we receive, we give. And then we should save somewhere between 10 and 25%. You're going to find some kids that don't want to save a single penny. And some kid, you know, the dollar just burns a hole in his pocket as soon as he gets it.
I've got one of each.
And other kids who never want to let go of a single cent. And, you know, she's holding on to $100 and she just can't decide what to do with it.
Right.
And that's fine. She can take her time. But saving no more than 25% makes sense to me, where that means that they're supposed to be spending between 65 to 80% of what they earn as allowance or what they earn for extra chores. The things that are chop wood, carry water, that we go through on a daily, weekly basis, laundry and kitchen duty and sweeping the floor and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are just the regular things that I think are part of being part of the household. But if they're sorting through the pile of junk mail that you don't want to deal with, and they're taking out the address information and shredding it and recycling the rest of it, that's a service that they're providing to the family that isn't part of normal family life and be compensated extra.
Right. That's like a little office assistant.
I think that's sort of what we're doing. I mean, we give him a you know, like $3 a week as an allowance. But if he wants more than that, then he has to do the special jobs. But we don't connect. I don't think we're connecting the allowance to, you know, making his bed and setting the table.
Well, I guess maybe that's the definition of an allowance.
Yeah.
Is that you know, it's like here's kind of the money that your fun money or whatever that you get to do just because.
Great. And so if you have a religious practice and you meet on a regular basis, then you might want to encourage your child to bring 10% of that allowance to donate.
See, I think my kids would like that. I think if I said, hey, you know, you guys got really generous gifts from grandma. Why don't we go buy some canned goods and take them over to the food bank? I actually think my girls would really like that. I think
My son is kind of obsessed with homelessness.
Is he?
So, he saves money to give to charity.
I have taken to keeping a box of protein bars in my glove box. And when I see someone by the side of the road, I'll pull over and give them a bar.
Oh, that's nice. A good idea.
That's a good
idea. They say they're hungry. I'm giving them food. Mm-hmm. That feels more direct to me than handing them money that, honestly, I'm not sure where it's going to go.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that's a whole other, like, ball of wax there.
I do like,
yeah, so my
I do
kids
like the guys
giving
who
the
have...
person food, and it's like, okay, he says he's hungry with the sign. Mm-hmm. Here's some food.
Well, there are the guys who honestly say, I want, you know, their signs say, I want to get a drink and some cigarettes.
Yeah.
Do you not give them cash? Or I've seen them, and I respect it. Honesty right there.
But when we encourage them to give, we're building that compassion as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important for them to have that sense of compassion, that sense of there but for the grace of whatever power you believe in, go myself and our family. And when we have so much, when we have so much abundance, we're grateful and we're compassionate. And that's part of the bigger lesson around money and why I think it's so important to have the conversation with your partner. What's important for us to teach to our kids about money? Because there is a dearth of financial education in the school system. It's almost as if it's a taboo subject. What did you get in school about money?
That is the issue.
Thought?
Yeah, I really find that it really is a taboo subject. It's like, why can't we even just talk to our kids about what a household budget looks like? Mm-hmm. Why can't we talk about that? Is it because, you know, everybody's parents make a different amount of money? And so...
That's true. I don't remember at any point in my education somebody talking about the realities of just a household budget.
Yeah. Then,
right?
You hear about economics and the history of economics, and it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around that.
I
never understood precisely how the stock market works, and it's weird and it doesn't make sense. But the fact that I was never taught like simple cash flow through a household.
Right.
That would have been very helpful. It certainly would have helped me when I got to college, because it was easy for me when I got to college to just run out of money because I wasn't.
Oh, absolutely. You know. Yeah. How about you, Sophie? Did you get any kind of education in school anywhere about money or finance?
My mom is she's good with money, and she actually did teach me quite a bit and, you know, taught me how to write checks and taught me how to, you know, and, but she's, you know, she grew up in, I guess she was kind of a depression baby, you know, but she's a little bit fear-based about money, you know, understandably so, considering she's also very generous and, but she really would always talk about saving. You know, because in her, the paradigm of money to her is money equals safety, you know?
Yeah.
And so, there was a little bit of, fear around it that kind of, you know, kind of made me uncomfortable. I want to teach my kids a little bit more abundance and trust around it, but she's very smart with it and did always make me aware of, I think she did teach me actually how to balance a checkbook. So
that's
when I,
fabulous.
I'm not saying I never got into debt, trust me, because I was in that generation that like they were handing credit cards out at school. Like
college. They don't do that anymore.
They're not allowed to do that anymore. But that I was part of that. It was like, here's a credit card. Yeah. Whoa, this is cool.
That's fun, right?
So I'm not saying
I had
that,
a sixth grade mini course on the stock market.
Really?
And yes, I had a very progressive sixth grade teacher, Mr. Weber.
No way.
And after that, nothing. So it wasn't until I became educated as a financial professional that I really earned my stripes and started to understand how things work. And you know what's ironic is that I went to a very, very good university in the East Coast, and I took calculus in my last year of high school. And yet my middle son, who wasn't so great at math, had a finite math course where they actually taught him how to balance a checkbook and went through the interest rates on credit cards and savings and investments.
Wow.
He had a better understanding than these other kids who were taking calculus and going to supposedly better schools.
Can you imagine, being in 12th grade and actually learning about the bullshit of credit cards, interest and how that that would be amazing. That would have saved
practical.
A lot of people a lot of trouble.
Oh, I know. Just teaching them the rule of 72 would be a useful thing to teach in a math class.
And what's the rule of 72?
Very seldom taught.
What's the rule of 72?
The rule of 72 is how compound interest works. So if you have, say, an interest rate, you divide it into 72, and then you find out how long it takes to double your money. So, for instance, if there's a 4% interest rate, it's going to take you 18 years to double your money. And good luck finding 4% currently at any of the banks that are
interesting.
But, you know, if there's an investment and it's paying 8% and it's compounding, it's going to take you 9 years to double your money. That's the rule of 72. Mm-hmm. If you've got a credit card, oh, goodness gracious, if you've got a credit card and you're paying 12% on that credit card, it's going to double in 6 years.
And it'll take you 72 years to pay it off. That's
well,
the rule
these days,
of 72.
I don't know if you carry balances, but if you carry any balance on your credit card now, by law, they have to tell you that if you pay the minimum, this is how many years it's going to take to pay it off.
Yes.
And sometimes it's laughable.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is going to take you 31 years to pay off. What? Well, so it's very important to teach children how to be competent in the area of money so that it can make good, sound decisions that will help them down the road and make them feel like they're on top of it and it's not some big, scary, here be dragons part of the roadmap of adulthood.
We've talked about the gratitude and we've talked about the compassion and we've talked about the self-efficacy. And so, you know, because we're going to wrap up in a couple minutes here with you, and I love everything that you're working on, and I was just thinking as we were talking about this, that might be kind of an interesting place to start with your kids that are of age to understand it, is just to show them that little, now required by law, little box on your credit card bill that shows what this means. Because some kids are like, oh, you just put it on the credit card, and you go, oh, okay, well, yes, but let me show you.
Here's what it really means.
Let me show you what it means to put things on credit cards. And then they go, oh, you know. So it might be just kind of an interesting way to open a conversation.
Yeah.
Yes. What you buy on sale and put on a credit card is no longer on sale.
Right. Right.
That is so true, isn't it?
Right. Well, thank you for the opportunity. If anyone would like my services, I'm here at Silver Financial Services in Chatsworth, 818-718-4643. Thank you so much, Sophie, for inviting me back onto your show. It's a pleasure talking to you, Todd.
It was lovely talking to you as well.
Well, Ellen, you're not quite off the hook yet.
Yeah, you're not done.
Okay.
You have to take the MILF quiz.
It's going to get crazy. It's going to get crazy.
Yeah, this is where we start drinking.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Okay.
Do you have tequila with you?
Yeah, do you have
in
tequila?
The
and do you have a ping pong bowl?
We're across the street from Los Toros. So
okay,
after
great.
People get their taxes done, we send them over for tequila.
Nice. That's perfect. That's perfect. Okay, so get your little ping pong ball and your cup out. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so this is just a quick little quiz. All right, you ready?
Uh-huh.
All right. First word that comes to your mind when you hear the word MILF?
Moms.
Oh, all right. What turns you on creatively?
Music.
Number one celebrity on your hump island?
Oh, goodness. Hugh Jackman.
Oh,
wow.
Nice choice.
You like abs.
He can sing.
Oh, I know. Oh, my goodness. So the man cute, can isn't sing. He? He just oozes talent. He's adorable.
Oh, and he can dance. Oh, my goodness.
I know. He's just too
And
much.
That accent, that's not hard to listen to.
I know, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, well, then that might be the answer to the next one. What sound or noise do you love?
The sound of Hugh Jackman singing. Obviously.
I know.
Yes,
exactly.
There we go.
There
that's
you go. Hey,
right
this
there.
Is not your quiz. You,
I'm
you
sorry.
Know, you get a lot of opportunities.
I don't want to put words okay. in your mouth.
Well, I just love music. I've always been very musical, and I spent a lot of my life in music, so I'm very happy anytime there's music going on.
What's your favorite kind of music?
Hey, we are not to
no,
that question.
I want to know okay. what her favorite kind is.
I listen to a range from pop to Broadway to jazz to standards. I'm really happy that they put the 40s back on Sirius Channel 4 because there's some great stuff hiding on that station.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just keeps me happy when I'm sitting here at work helping people with money. So
I love the old school stuff. I used to sing it with my dad. So
mm-hmm.
fun.
Great
okay,
stuff.
So what now? What noise or sound do you hate?
Whining.
Here. favorite song to sing in the shower?
Oh, it depends on my mood.
Okay, good mood.
Good mood? I respect Aretha Franklin. Yeah.
What about a bad mood?
Oh, Love's Been Rough on Me at a Dame.
Nice.
Nice.
Boy, that's a depressing shower.
Okay, what's your favorite song to sing at karaoke after two drinks?
Oh, goodness. Bring Him Home.
Oh, my God. That would just
I
make
love
me
that
cry.
Song. I don't like the rest of the show all that much, but that song always gets
oh,
me.
Oh, I know. That song's just a tearjerker. Kills me. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What's Bring Him Home? I don't
it's
even
from know. Les Mis.
Oh, that's why I don't
yeah,
like
it. It's just that whole show, man.
Les Mis is...
I've seen it in New York, and I've seen the movie.
Not my
and,
thing.
Oh, God. I could just go on about how brilliant people are, but I just don't ever want to see it again.
I ran a spotlight. I ran a spotlight for a week for a performing arts high school Les Mis production.
Yeah? And you wanted to kill yourself by the end of the week?
I wanted to jump out of that light booth into
just,
the crowd.
I know. It's horrifying. Ugh, it's just awful. Ugh. Okay.
I felt like Russell Crowe was in the wrong movie.
He was. We all know that. It's sad.
Poor man.
What is your favorite curse word?
Well, it's definitely the F word, but I try not to do it too often in front of small children.
Okay. All right. Then we'll just let you slide on that. Okay. So if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's all okay. you can hope for, really.
And if I exist and you appear on my doorstep, what should I hope to have in my fridge?
White Zinfandel wine, please.
Oh. You're going to be the cutest 80-year-old woman with your little white Zin. Do you like it in a box?
Have a nice glass of wine, put our feet up, and have a
little
chat.
And have a little chit-chat.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and I do hope that you will come back again. That is our show for today.
Thank you.
Go ahead and stay on the line while I say goodbye to everybody. Thank you, Todd, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And be sure we're still setting our DVRs for You're the Worst.
Yeah, watch You're the Worst.
On
10:30 Thursdays on FX.
Yes, because you'll see this handsome devil on the small screen, I guess is what it is. Sometimes really small if it's on your iPad. You can find me on Facebook as Sophie Venable, and you can follow me on Twitter at MILF Talk. You can find my book MILF 101 on Amazon, or probably last chance to enter the giveaway on Goodreads and win one of 20 copies that I'm giving away for free. Thank you for listening today.
Bye.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/ Wait for it comedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.